your intuition's like, oh my God, I got a bad feeling. Get out of there. Get out of there. My family went through a traumatic event.
Welcome to Always Bev, The Ripple Effect. It's my privilege to host this episode number 50 and to uniquely welcome in the founder and driving force behind Always Bev, Barb Jordan. Welcome, Barb.
Oh, it's so great to be here. I'm excited about this opportunity.
Well, let's get right to it. Heading into the fourth year of Always Bev, you've given tons of seminars to thousands of people that without question have saved trauma, sadness, sorrow, and ultimately, without question, have saved lives. You've trudged your way, I think a lot of people would agree, through a trauma that drags people into darkness. And you've emerged not only into the light yourself, but you emerged with the launch of Always Bev. That endeavor is so unique in that it constantly illuminates a path for others so they can avoid the many possibilities for abuse and harm. I know this is a tough time of year for you and your family. You're coming up on the 34th anniversary of the murder of your sister, Beverly. And I'd like to ask you to start off with, during this time of year, what gets better for you and what stays the same?
Well, all of that put tears in my eyes. So I think that what gets better for me around the holidays, I think that just the celebration of the holidays, and typically in the communities or with my family, with my friends, just a celebration, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, I always try to fall into the holiday spirit. What's difficult are the moments of silence, the times when I'm alone, and the time that you reflect. I mean, I know Thanksgiving Day was the last time I ever saw my sister. I know the Saturday after Thanksgiving was the last time I ever talked to my sister by telephone. So, I mean, there's just those memories just never go away. And it's not something you want to dwell on. It's not something that you want to think about. Unfortunately, those thoughts as well are just part of the holidays for me.
And on the heels of what was a very long and undoubtedly painful period of healing for you personally, you launched Always Bev. And that was sort of, you've talked about it a lot, that was your answer to the frustration and I think a little bit of the helplessness of having the person who murdered her released from prison. And as you, I just want to ask you, as you think about the seminars right now and so many that you've done and so many people that you've touched, tell us a little bit about the organizations and groups and individuals that tend to take part in this.
The people that bring me in, I always praise the leaders, whoever that might be, whether it's the CEO of a company, whether it's the coach of a team or the athletic director of a university. I always praise the leaders because what that leader is saying is that they're aware that the people that work for them or participate in their school, whatever it is, their activities, they care about them as people. They're not just looking at them for the short time that they're with them. They're looking out for their safety when they leave their entity. And so I always praise those people that bring me in.
I think that's a great point because I think so many companies are trying to find ways to make sure that they are looking out for really beyond the obvious needs of employees. We hear a lot about mental health and the various activities and ways that employers are going about helping employees. But this is something that is prevalent. I know it's particularly prevalent with women. And so I agree with you. I think it speaks volumes when people go to the effort to coordinate this for their employees. And sometimes times. I know it's players and athletes and that type of thing, friends at times. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah. And the reason why I launched Always Bev, people compliment me a lot, and it doesn't really sink very deep. I appreciate it. But the reason why I launched Always Bev is because when Rich Lewis was released from prison, it just made me think, not only him, but so many others. They get released on parole. They're walking around. They're not the scary looking person necessarily. Like, we can all go out and walk outside of a Target and be like, ooh, that person over there gives me a bad feeling. But Rich and so many others, the thing about them is that they're common looking people and they mix in with society. And that's really why I launched Always Bev, was to prepare and to educate people on the warning signs, on things to look out for, so that the sort of trauma that hit my family that I've had to deal with for so many years, and my family as well, is that it never happens to them. That's exactly why I launched Always Bev.
So you follow along on social media. One thing that you do is that you post a lot of what I would call kind of a summary video, a mashup of what happened at this seminar or that seminar. You also are known for posting photos, sort of group photos at the end with your associate, Bob, who doesn't ever have too much to say, but is an important part of it. But you look at the participants, and this is a relatively difficult subject. And I know there's some tough points in your presentations, but it always looks like they're so into it. And I think that speaks a lot to you as a coach and a teacher. But why do you think the information resonates with these groups?
I think that not everybody always knows what they're coming to. Some people show up because they've been told by their leaders that you need to be here at such and such time. And I ask them when they come in, do you know what you're coming to? And, oh, it's about safety. Oh, it's about self-defense. But I try to connect. And I think through my years of being a teacher, through my years of being a coach, I can read an audience. And I think that I can read an audience. Obviously, the content of the course changes depending on who I'm working with. If I've worked with girls as young as 10 years old, obviously, the things I would share with 10-year-olds are a lot different than things I might share with 30-year-olds. But I just think that I read a room well. And I also think that the things I talk about, not only are they real, but I'm giving people solutions. I'm giving people answers to things that they probably have thought about, but they just don't bring it up in conversation. And I think I give people permission to know and to say that when that intuition kicks in, that it's important to pay attention to it. I empower people kind of like with, yeah, that did happen to me. And yes, this is going on. And yes, when I go to parties, that does happen. Why do guys keep giving me drink after drink after drink? I'm saying all the things that's when I, specifically women, that when women go out and they experience these things, I think I'm hitting spots with them and they're like, yeah, this does happen to us. And so by the end of the class, we're like holding hands and we're like, we are empowered. And we're like, and this isn't going to happen to me or our circle of friends or our family.
That's awesome. And I agree with you. I think that resonates. And I think there's a lot in the delivery, but there's a lot in the information and there's a lot in the structure. So I've seen the seminars several times and they are sort of a combination, I would say, of some storytelling, definitely some identifying healthy and unhealthy behavior, some vigilance practice, tips that you give, and even some physical self-defense tips. But I think undoubtedly, you talked about the variation in the audience. Undoubtedly, whether it is fifth and sixth grade girls or whether it is professional women, and a lot of times men even get so much from the seminars, the structure works. So talk a little bit more about the components of an Always Bev seminar and why you think they work.
Well, I think they work because I talk about real issues, and some of the stories I share, it's a fact. They're difficult. Sometimes I don't go into the details. If somebody lost their life of the gruesome details of it, but the stories are the same in with respect to these people were in areas of isolation. And it's sometimes that our areas of isolation could be our most common and fun environments. And so when we start talking about that and we're like, oh, like I was on a golf course and I was by myself and I was approached and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, of course, there's a story for that about a young woman who was on a golf course and a man comes out of the marsh. Of course, she didn't know what to do. It's her most favorite environment. She was trying to become a professional golfer. And so Always Bev is about always having a plan that when you're alone, even if it's your funnest environment, you always have to have a plan for a what if moment. And that should not scare you. That should empower you, that you know that you have skills, you have tools, that you can stay safe. If the wildest imagination you can think of somebody bringing you harm, if that ever happens, you play the what if game. What if this happened? If you have an answer for it, you're empowered. That alone takes away fear.
We mentioned the participants, thousands of participants. And I have to say that one of the things that I love about the just thinking about the delivery is that you know that this is the type of information that inevitably will be shared, whether it's mothers or fathers sharing it with their daughters or friends, or the young women themselves sharing it with their friends, and just sort of even setting an example. A lot of times it could be nonverbal, but that information, I always say, I don't think you have any idea of how far reaching it really is. And I think the fact that it's delivered in a simple and really easy to understand method is something that makes it that much more possible and realistic that it will be shared. I'll tell you, off of that, one of the points that I think stands out for me is that so much of the information is easily shared. And I always say this, I don't think you realize how many people are truly touched by it, because there might be 100 people sitting in the room in front of you, but those 100 people are going to share either directly or indirectly. They could say, hey, I want to tell you this story I heard, and this is how to do this. Or they might just influence people with their actions. Hey, come with me. I don't want to go by myself here.
I've gone out and I have brought in 5 different consultants, and they have over 100 years experience in law enforcement, in the military. So I know that the skills I teach resonate with people. And as you mentioned, they're easy to apply. And I encourage everyone that comes and takes the course to share these skills. I know these skills work. I know these skills keep people safe, whether it's safety in numbers, whether it's something that you said, oh, somebody's like, oh, I'm going to take Uber. And somebody goes, oh, did you know that these are the 4 things you have to do before you get into an Uber and Lyft? Anything like that. If we continue to do that as a society, we're going to help each other stay safe. And in today's world, we all need to help each other stay safe.
Well, you talk about sharing the information. So yes, there is a one-way share that's coming from you with your information and your examples and your techniques that you're sharing with people. But the seminars themselves are also certainly interactive. You at times will ask for feedback. You will ask for participation. And I know that you talk to people a lot even after the seminars. What's something that comes up? Is there something that comes up consistently? Are you surprised ever? You read so much about the stories and so much about the information that you share. Are there things out there during the seminars or following the seminars that even surprise you at times?
I think that the stories I hear surprise me sometimes, you know, how much I study. And maybe like I recently did a class in Bakersfield, California, and it wasn't the story that I heard in the class. It was the story that brought me to the class. And to have the participants of the friend that was killed be in that class and to see them and to understand, you know, when you go through trauma, you look at the world differently. And to see these 13-year-olds understand on a higher level than the other 13-year-olds that were in the course, understand on a higher level the need to know skills to stay safe. It was, it was inspiring on my side. But specific stories, I would say that the specific feedback I get at the end of a class, most of the time, if it has to do with women, women are talking to me about relationships and the warning signs they see within their own relationship or the warning signs they see within their friend's relationship and what actions to take to get through to them. Other than telling them, you got to leave them, they're an idiot, they're an asshole, nobody should be treating you that way. You know, that person's already being manipulated and controlled. And I try to give them skills on how do you help that person. And the one thing, instead of saying, leave them, do this, do that, listen and flip it around and say, when he left you and didn't give you a ride and he left you standing in that parking lot by yourself, how did that make you feel? And get that person to do some reflecting on how they feel, not on what we think and not on what their boyfriend thinks, but on really how did it make them feel? And that might open up a whole different conversation to help them heal.
And don't you think that sometimes it's sort of just a matter of, it sounds funny, but don't you think sometimes it's just a matter of you saying it's okay to feel this way? It's okay to react to that.
Yeah, I think that it's normal. It's normal behavior. We want to see our people be surrounded by support and love. We want to see our person's life be enhanced, not be brought down, not watch them live in fear or panic or, you know, feel like they've got to jump to their phone to answer a text because their person just texts them and they have to respond. We don't want to see our people move through the world that way. We want to see our people celebrate and to have a companion and to hold hands and to be happy. That's what we want for everybody in our lives.
If when you look at all the research and the conversations that you have and the reflecting that you inevitably do naturally day in and day out, if violence, particularly, I'm going to ask you this one, particularly against women, could be significantly reduced, what do you think are the most important aspects? I don't want to have you give your whole seminar here, but what do you think are the most important aspects and the primary tips or areas of focus?
I think in general, obviously, awareness. I think that when we move about this world, we have to be aware of our surroundings, even if we're in our most comfortable environments. You'll start to look at the people that come to my class. You ask me, what's the feedback? They tell me they look at the world differently. And to me, that's the best thing that you could ever say to me is you're looking at the world. And if you do that, it's empowering because you know you're safe. That's what awareness brings. So awareness is like the first thing I'm going to say to people is, hey, you got to be aware. And this is how you're aware. These are the things you look for, whether it's what pump you pull up to when you get gas, whether it's what parking spot you pick, having awareness of what you're doing when you're alone, that alone can save your life. I think that safety in numbers, I always say at the end of my class, when you have the chance to take somebody with you, whether it's, you know, a coffee run, whatever it is, take somebody with you. And I think decision-making, when you're in social settings, you can't get caught up in the moment. You can't get caught up in somebody giving you drink after drink after drink. When people give you drinks, that makes you unaware. That's why people are giving you drink after drink after drink. So decision-making is really important. Having the ability to say no, but more importantly, having the strength and the confidence to repeat that no. I always say in my class, say no, like when you would ask your mom if you could do something and she'd say no. If you can say no like that, where there's no wiggle room, you're going to do really well in life when you want to keep somebody out of your life. But I think overall, safety in numbers keeps people safe.
That's excellent. I know you also talk a lot about intuition with women and people in general, just listening to that little voice in your head. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well and how vital you think that is to safety?
I think has everything to do with it. I think if we learn to listen to our voice, a lot of times I think it's your very first thought. before other people start trying to tell you why somebody's good and why you should trust them. And, oh, they're so funny. And, oh, he's a nice guy. If that's all we know about people is that they're funny or that they're a nice guy, we don't know anything about them. So if that little thing in your stomach is kind of twisting and turning and you get that funny feeling, that's your sixth sense. That's your sixth sense saying, really, we don't want this person to be in our inner circle. We want to keep this person at a distance or keep this person completely away. And I think that people in the class understand that. Like the women understand intuition. They know what I'm talking about when I do the different scenarios of it. And that in itself as a reminder is listen to that. Listen to that feeling. That will keep you safe.
I'm going to ask you another question, kind of the same one, only a little differently. So I just asked you particularly about keeping the participants safe and what can they do. But I'm going to ask you a little bit bigger scale question. What do you think society, clearly when we see the numbers and we see the statistics, there's a problem. There's a huge problem in violence person to person, and particularly violence against women. So being entrenched in the world of trying to keep women safe, what would you say is the single biggest enemy of that? And if there was something you could do on a broader scale besides just, I don't want to say just, but besides speaking directly to people and helping them keep themselves safe, what do you think we could do as a society to change and make things markedly helpful?
I think the first part of your question is for women, I think they need to not be so trusting. I think that, not that I want people to go out and not trust anybody, but the people that are really vigilant say, like, my first thought is not to trust people. It doesn't mean you have to be rude to them, but I want you to know it's okay to be rude to people, especially if your intuition's like, oh my God, I got a bad feeling. Get out of there. Get out of there. On a broader scale, I would love, and I would like to have the time to do this, or find somebody to do this. And if you know somebody, please contact me. I believe that all people that have committed a violent offense and that have served time for this violent offense, and now they're released on parole, like Eric Lewis, who now goes by Rich Lewis, and he walks around the streets of LA and he wears a Marine ball cap and he wears a Marine t-shirt. How do you know the difference? You see him on social media. He'll say he's worked overseas for 30 years. He's in Toastmasters. He's this, he's that. If that's all you're looking at, how do you know that you can trust this person? And if they fool you, that's even worse, because my family was fooled by somebody like this. Now, if people that have committed violent offenses got released from prison and they had to register as violent offenders, we would have a database to go to. And if we had concerns about somebody, all we have to do is punch it in. Like you see a child sex offender, you punch in your zip code, all your child sex offenders pop up in that neighborhood. We should have that for people that have been in prison and they have been released after committing a violent attack.
Well, and I think just hearing some of your stories about the women that were attacked and often killed, had they known, it was just what you're saying. They had no idea this person, but if they had been able to look him up and say, oh, he actually served 30 years for murdering someone. I think your concept of going out for a drink or coffee changes drastically.
It absolutely does. And the other thing that people have to understand is these people, if they have been in jail and you can Google their name and the story comes up, they go by a different name now. Like Lauren McCluskey was a college student at Utah. She started dating someone who was a bouncer at a bar. He told her his name, and it wasn't the right name. It wasn't his real name. Of course it wasn't, because he was charged and served time under a different name. And so now he's going by this other name, which he tells her, which when she Googles it, she doesn't find anything concerning. until one day he flips his wallet on the counter. It opens up and she catches a glance of his driver's license, which has a completely different name than the one he told her. Now she Googles that name and all of his violent offenses from the past come up. She can't get away from him soon enough. She leaves him immediately, only to come home from class one night where he's waiting for her in the parking lot because he knows her schedule. He waited for her for 6 hours. And when she came home that night, he ended her life.
Whew. All right. I'm going to switch gears with you a little bit. In August of 2020, you launched a podcast, Always Bev, The Ripple Effect. And the first episode was really about literally the ripple effect on the murder of your sister and how that trickled down to your family and her friends. And you had a lot of those folks on as guests, as well as just yourself talking about that impact. But I want to ask you how the podcast has complemented and really added to the overall goals and impact of Always Bev.
The podcast impacted my life because I believe that it helped me heal. It helped me get a little bit of perspective to understand the deception and evilness that not only my sister Bev went through, but that us as the Jordan family went through, and that we have been left with the aftermath to deal with this for our whole lives. Overall, I think if it complements my life at all, it's because I feel like I have the opportunity to help people. I think that I do help some people, and it's very rewarding. I always say, you know, I'll never trade my life for anything, but I wish I had launched Always Bev years ago.
And beyond season one, which had, I think, a lot of interesting people that had the unique perspective of losing a loved one in a not only a violent manner, but a deceptive manner that a lot of people were very close to as her friends and family. But beyond season one, you have spoken with victims of family members and friends and just participants in other violent crimes and actions against people. But you've also brought on some specialists in particular areas. And I think that was a branching out as well of just trying to talk with people that would have something else, a little different to enlighten your listeners with.
I think that we can learn a lot from victims, but I also realize that listening to victims share their stories can be hard. So I do like having people that are experts in their area, somebody who is an expert in sex trafficking. And then they talk about, well, how do you identify an area for sex trafficking? You know, how are people victimized into sex trafficking? Like, we hear all these different things. Oh, they marked my car. You know, oh my God, I've got a zip tie on my car. And then you bring in an expert like Chris Lim, and they say, most of the sex traffickers are living online. They're stalking you online. That's how they're finding you 90% of the time. And so knowing that, I think, of course, we all know this, that social media and the internet is dangerous, but it gives us better awareness. Like, oh my God, like don't interact with this stranger. We have no idea who these people are hiding behind the internet. So those experts also create great awareness for the audience.
I always think those are interesting. Sort of, you talk about just the intensity sometimes of hearing from victims, families, and friends. And I think that your specialists and your experts have added a lot to that podcast. Overall, what can we expect? So you started out with the ripple effect very literally, and you sprinkled in some expert interviews with some folks that were certainly enlightening. What can we expect from the podcast in the future?
I think the number one thing is I'm always looking for people to participate in the podcast. I'm always looking for people to interview, whether they've had an experience, whether they know somebody, whatever it is, but it's going to continue to be educational, whoever that might be that I bring on. And it doesn't have to always do with, you know, women being victimized. We're going to have somebody come in and talk about social media, about bullying online, just different things where, you know, not everybody has the same families or the same structures in their households. We all have different things going on. So I think some episodes really pertain to some people's lives, and then different episodes really pertain to other people's lives. And I hope to continue to do that, to create a diverse content for people to continue to want to listen. I'm thankful for the audience that we've had. I think we've been in over 25 different countries. Wow. And I'm proud of it. And we just reached over 10,000 downloads this year. So it's going well. It's, you know, it's not viral, and that's okay. I get a lot of messages from people thanking me and telling me to keep going. And I think to myself, really, you know, really, you like it's helping you, it's helping you. And I always say, and my friends will tell me, if you help at least one person, you know, you're making a difference. And so I think that this podcast has helped people. And I hope that God continues to give me the avenue to help others.
Well, it's been 34 years since Beverly was senselessly and selfishly murdered by Rich Lewis or Eric Lewis or whatever he's going by at the moment. You've interviewed many victims through the podcast we just talked about. They've been victims of violence and deception and predatory behavior. I want to ask you, you just talked about it a little bit and touched on it, but how those interviews and that shared experience and sort of reflection with those folks have helped you with your own thoughts or emotions of the loss of your sister?
That's a good question. And I would say that when I have guests on the show that have been victims, they tell me that, you know, being on the show and being able to talk about their story is healing. And I know that when I actually did the first season, it was healing. Like, I know exactly what they're talking about. But the one thing that having all these different guests and all these different experts come on the show, the one eye-opening thing that has happened for me is that I never knew that, or I never identified Bev's death as trauma. And I couldn't understand all these years. I mean, I give myself a break and I'm like, well, of course you can't get over it. That was, you know, that was terrible. And that was sad. And that was violent. And that was scary. But now through interviewing all these different people, I understand it on a different level. And it all almost gives me peace in knowing that my family went through a traumatic event. And that takes a lifetime to deal with. It's something that we will always deal with. And so just having that understanding and hearing that word trauma just allows me to be like, yeah, that's why it's so hard. That's why it's so difficult.
As we wrap up, I want to touch a little bit on the overall growth. We just talked about the podcast and you mentioned over 25 countries and 10,000 downloads. And I want to ask you, I know that your seminars are one after the other, it seems like there's so many people who are hearing about them a lot of times from other folks and wanting to do them themselves and scheduling that in. I know that you will always say that you started Always Bev a little bit out of a helplessness, a little bit out of a frustration that Rich Eric Lewis had been released and was going to walk the streets, and that was the end of that. So you started Always Bev to help people. You have to be happy with, and a lot of it is your own making. There's no doubt about it, your own hard work and motivation. But you launched the podcast, the seminars are booming. What can we expect in the future? And B, just a little bit about the growth. Does this surprise you at all, or is this what you expected?
I think the growth of Always Bev makes me happy. I think that obviously, I have a connection with softball. I have a connection with the state of California because that's where I grew up. So it doesn't surprise me you know, to get classes out that way or to get classes within the sport of softball. But when I start doing other sports, when I hit women's basketball or I hit water polo, I hit field hockey, whatever it is, I'm like, oh, that's word of mouth, you know, and that's really what Always Bev is. It's word of mouth. But when the vice president of the NHL sends me an email and she says, we want you to do a seminar for our employees, that is exciting to me. Or, you know, next year I have two keynotes already lined up and I'm excited about that. One of them is going to be for Dignity Hospital in Northridge, California. And I'm going to be speaking to employees from the Los Angeles Unified School District on how to prevent violence in schools. And again, the director of that hospital happened to sit in on a webinar that I was doing for CSUN alumni. And she wrote me like 2 days after that webinar. And she said, I want you to do the same exact presentation for my employees at the hospital. And also we want you to be a keynote for this special event we have with the school system. So things like that motivate me. They excite me. And again, I just pray that I can continue to get out there and have the platform to keep people safe.
Well, listen, we've talked about the thousands of people that have experienced your seminars firsthand. I hope there are thousands more because we know it's not just life changing, it's life saving. It's truly impactful. And thank you for what you do, Barb. We know the world's a little bit safer because of you. And I hope that Always Bev continues to grow and you have the success in this venture that you really deserve, because it's a terrific platform and it is a terrific cause. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for doing this episode. I'll be back in 6 short weeks as we begin season 7. And if you know any victims that would like to share their story, please contact me on my website at alwaysbev.com. I'm Barb Jordan. Thanks for joining us in another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect.